Alexander Ovechkin. He's a funny guy. You know who's funnier? Bruce frickin' Boudreau. When Ovechkin goes to say hello to him on the bench while they're practicing, the Minnesota Wild, Boudreau yells at him, "I thought you were going to the Olympics."
Well,
burn.
Not playing for Russia.
Welcome to Overtime Hockey Talk. That's a good little start, I think.
Yeah, I like it.
Ovechkin starting off the show this morning. I guess Bruce Boudreau actually is the one starting that off, but that's just a little Olympic humor. We all need a little Olympic humor in our life.
Yeah.
Or is it just, you know, not fulfilling your word kind of start to the show?
Well, I'll tell you what, after the U.S. loss, I need a little Olympic humor.
Wow, that was... So. To lose to Slovenia.
Yeah.
The only NHL player to come from Slovenia is Kopitar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess on the one hand, you could say, I mean, other than Kopitar, it's basically the Olympic team from last year, or not last year, from 4 years ago, essentially. So I mean, you would hope that over the last 4 years, their program has gotten a little better. And you could say, well, the U.S. has had to send their... you know, maybe their third or fourth best squad.
Right.
And speaking of, like, you know, a lot, some teams are sending their B squads, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the U.S., I would say it's probably their, like, fourth or fifth best team would be my guess.
Yeah.
Russia, I would say that they're legitimately sending their B team. I mean, they have a lot of solid players who also lost in their opening game to Slovakia, was it?
Yeah, it was Slovakia. And they didn't lose in overtime, though, which is good for U.S., but I bet you they wish they had Ovechkin with them.
Yeah, I'm sure they could have used him today. Well, we found on Reddit a user named Halo Grand, said, with most countries sending their B squad, he was curious about what squad Canada was potentially sending, what letter squad. So what he did was... create teams based on point production and the goalies by save percentage. So ironically, like, Carey Price isn't even on this list. Holtby is actually on the D team. Bernier is on the C team. Mike Smith actually made the B team. And Carter Hutton is the top goalie for Canada. But nonetheless, I mean, your top line is, of course, Crosby, McDavid, Stamkos. Then you have Tavares, McKinnon, Giroux. It's a solid lineup from team A to D. But so there are enough players under contract in the National Hockey League to create 17 full teams.
Stop it.
Okay, so we have 17 full teams, and that is only limited because there's only 34 Canadian goaltenders under contract in the NHL. So that number could obviously be a little higher if there were more goalies available.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many more players, but there's 17 full teams. So you could assume that the team that Canada sent is their 18th best team. 18. So they are their R squad.
Their R squad.
We've got our R squad over there. Hopefully there's a pirate or two on the team.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, that's just... it's just incredible that, and I mean, even your D team doesn't have to include who at the beginning of this season we would have said for sure a top three goaltender in the league. I think he's still there. It just, the season's been a disaster for the Canadians. It's not his fault. He was hurt. And yeah, the Canadians, we all, Mark Bergevin leaves us scratching our heads all too often. So
I haven't stopped since the beginning of the year.
I don't think that that's on Carey Price.
No.
So Ilja Tolvanen for Sweden, I'm trying to figure if it was last night or, I mean, it was technically today. It was 2:40 in the morning, I think, is when Sweden played.
Yeah.
Nice enough for the people at the Olympic scheduling for hockey to at least schedule the games somewhat in these countries' time availabilities when, like, it's reasonable to be up.
Yeah.
I have Canada either plays at 10, Canada and U.S. either play at 10 something, or they played this morning. Canada played at 7:10 in the morning. So I woke up, I watched Canada play Switzerland. Now I'm in a unique position here because I'm American and I'm Canadian.
That's true.
I've grown up cheering for Canada, But I'll certainly cheer for America. I don't want America losing to Slovenia. I don't look good on anybody. So
no. Well, U.S. has got to play Slovakia at 10:10 p.m. tonight, Thursday.
Right,
yeah, okay. On CNBC.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely be watching. And since we haven't stated the date that we're recording this, this is Thursday, February the 15th. Happy Valentine's Day,
yeah.
Justin.
By the way, how was your Valentine's Day?
My Valentine's Day was it was wonderful.
Good.
I made food. I made a great pasta dish.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love pasta.
And with some zucchini noodles, too. Like, I do a mix, and you get some people who do, like, the pure zucchini noodle thing. That's mm-hmm. just, I can't do that because that's just too much zucchini. But you get a little bit of zucchini noodle, mix it with some actual spaghetti. You mix it all together, get a good sauce, some ground turkey in there.
Oh, wow.
Some goat cheese. Goat cheese changes everything.
I mean,
it makes everything heavenly.
It's delicious.
There's like a different flavor to goat cheese than any other cheese, and it melts into sauces, and it is orgasmic. I would say that
wow.
It's borderline that.
That's
which
bold.
Which is basically what Valentine's Day is all about, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, whether you're alone or not, it can still be that way.
Well, I had some lamb, which was ooh, nearly orgasmic. There you go. So, yeah, went to
did
Weber's.
Did you kill the lamb? Oh, you went to Weber's.
Yeah. Went out and slaughtered the lamb myself and walked into Weber's and said, cook this for me.
Perfect. Yes. And this show brought to you by Weber's. No, it's not. It's not. They don't pay us to talk about their lamb, but no. We will. If more people go in there and they're like, hey, I heard about your restaurant from this awesome, amazing hockey podcast,
and we're
doing pretty good. Well, Eli Tolvanen, the prospect for the Nashville Predators, mm-hmm. had an incredible game. First Olympic game as a 19-year-old, I think he's, and a goal and three assists.
Wow.
And, of course, David Poile, GM of the Nashville Predators, was asked, you know, hey, what are your plans for him this season? He says, after watching him last night, I'd sure like to have him on our team. We're very interested in bringing him onto our roster. So a player who, obviously, Olympic competition is a little down this year, a lot down. I think they were actually playing Norway. So I don't, but I mean, a guy who can step in and give you points, that's a free deadline acquisition for the Predators. Do they bring Tolvanen up this season after the Olympics? That would be a very interesting addition to that team.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly help because from what I've been hearing, you know, the Nashville Predators are very high on Rick Nash right now, as are a bunch of other teams. So I imagine if maybe something happens where they can't land Rick Nash, because obviously they gave a lot of their nicer assets to bring in, you know, what's-his-face, Kyle Turris, you know, maybe this would be a nice alternative.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he doesn't have the experience that Rick Nash has, but you never know.
Yeah, I guess the issue would be, so he plays in the KHL right now.
Yeah.
You have to wait until the KHL season is over, and at that point, then you could bring him over and have him start playing. Now, remember, he's playing on the big ice surface, and so you're banking on a guy to come over, immediately adapt to a small surface, and head right into the NHL playoffs.
That's a tough situation.
It might be that he's still a year away. I don't know. I mean, obviously they're interested in bringing him on their roster. My guess is that that's a, hey, we're going to, now that your season's over, you're going to come over. I remember, was it William Nylander did this? William Nylander went over and he was playing in Sweden the year after he was drafted. And it might have even been the next year after that. And they, halfway through the season, when his season was over in Sweden, they brought him over and he played for the Marlies for like the last 20 games and was able to play in the playoffs for their American Hockey League team. So that to me makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If he were able to come over and he plays in the AHL, and let's say he just outperforms everybody, then sure, bring him up for the playoffs. But at very least, get him into the AHL, expose him to the smaller ice surface, let him, in the AHL, you're going to get more teaching opportunities. You know, those coaches are there to teach players.
Yeah, and he'll get more minutes so, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So I think that most likely you don't see him come up on a regular spot in the regular season, at least to me.
And I mean, have you heard anything more about Mike Fisher too, by the way? That sort of just kind of fell off the radar for me.
Yeah. He did officially unretire.
Did he? Okay.
And he's coming back. He hasn't played a game yet though.
Right, I know that.
So I would think that they're just, now that he's decided, I know he's been keeping in shape, but I mean, especially at, what was he, 37?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think that you probably are giving the guy 3 weeks to get back into game shape, like as much of game shape as possible. And so he's, I don't know if he's been involved in practices or not. That's an interesting thought. We'll have to check that out. But Mike Fisher coming back. Yeah, I mean, you look at, you got Mike Fisher and we have Ili Tolvanen coming in, potentially. You have a lot of options if you're Nashville. You also have a lot of pieces that you could move in your pool of prospects that you could easily move and acquire some extra talent for this run. I mean, is there any team more poised to win the Stanley Cup than the Nashville Predators right now?
No.
They have the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I think that there is a case to be made for Ekholm, Subban, and Josi to all be the top three front runners for the Norris. Like, it's not going to happen.
No, no.
But I think that it's very likely that one of them is in the top three voting. Either that or because they're all three of them are so good that people spread their votes around for those three. And
it hurts them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those are...
That'd be interesting, though. If you get one team that takes all the top three Norris spots.
Yeah.
I don't know. The last
Even
time...
Even two.
Yeah. You know, I remember...
Was Rafalski and Lidstrom ever up for... Or is Chelios and Lidstrom or something like that up for the Norris ever?
I don't remember, but I do remember there was, I think it was 2008, the year the Wings won the Cup. They were, it was like the first time in, oh, I don't know, like more than 15 years or something like that, where a team had three defensemen with 50 or more points in a season. Because they had Rafalski, Lindstrom, and Nicholas Cronwall all with 50 points.
Ah,
so,
I mean, Cronwall's peak season right there. Right. Really was.
He's actually playing better than I thought this year. I honestly, beginning of the season, I thought Cronwall was going to end up like missing half the games and then retiring because of his knee. But
right, I remember us talking about that. But yeah, he's had I would say a relative bounce back year, similar to that of like a Dan Girardi, where Dan Girardi was just awful last year. And,
yeah,
and this year he's been serviceable. He's been an average defenseman, and I'd say that that's about where Cronwall is at. Middle of the road defenseman, which is fine for where he's at in his career and the way that he plays. That's totally fine. So obviously we're headed in to trade deadline. We've been talking a lot about trades. What are we going to talk about on the show after trade deadline?
We're going to talk about which trade is going to backfire is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Right. Yes, certainly. We'll, you can always, there's always rumors coming down the pipeline. It will be nice to, And we definitely, you know, we will talk some actual hockey. Of course, the Leafs are, ever since Frederik Andersen called the team out after losing to Philadelphia, the Leafs are 10-2.
Sick.
Nazem Kadri and Mitch Marner in the last 10 games have combined for like 28 points, something like that. And Marlow is on that same line, and he's tore it up too. I don't know the three of them combined, but, I mean, Kadri's had a hat trick. Marner had a hat trick. Both guys had 5-point nights in the last.
It's scary how good they're playing. And you know what's even scarier to me is, as good as they've been, they're still not picking up that much ground in the division. Because Tampa Bay and Boston have just been chugging along too.
The Leafs are in the top five in the NHL.
Yeah,
for points.
So
and yet they're third in their division.
I think they're sixth.
Are they sixth overall and they're third in their division?
Yeah, it's funny to me because outside looking at all the other teams in every division, you could take any one of those three teams in that division and say they're better than just about any other team in the league. Maybe Nashville is the only team I would say might be better than one of those.
Nashville, you have probably Winnipeg. Winnipeg and Toronto to me are on very even legs. I think that they have a lot of similarities to both those teams.
Yeah.
Winnipeg has. Maybe some of their veteran players are like right in that sweet spot of their prime. Mm-hmm. Like Blake Wheeler is their best player aside from Scheifele.
Yeah.
But Wheeler is like, he's in those years where he's just ripe and in his prime and rolling. Whereas the Leafs don't necessarily have someone like that. I don't think you'd put James Van Riemsdyk into the same ilk as a Blake Wheeler.
No.
Blake Wheeler is potential MVP of the league
right
this year. So, whereas the Leafs, so many of their top players are not even 22 years old yet.
And that's scary.
Auston Matthews is 20.
That's so scary.
So, yeah, but I mean, so the Leafs are rolling, and they, let's see, the Blue Jackets had 57 shots on goal. They were the first team in the modern era to have 50 shots on goal 3 games in a row.
Wow, really?
They won their first 2 games, 4-1 and 5-1 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they lost to the Leafs 6-3. Anderson stopped 54 shots.
I know.
That's pretty un...
I'm almost ready to give Anderson the Hart Trophy at this point. He's been quietly good.
There's been a lot of Vezina potentials for him. I have not heard anybody put him in the Hart, but that is a very good point. Yeah, especially, you'd have to see, you look at the standings, the Leafs are 3 points back of Boston, 4 at Tampa, but they've played 2 games more than Tampa, and Boston is 4 games in hand on the Leafs. So in order to catch them, basically the Leafs have to beat both those teams every time they play them and just go ham here at the end, which truthfully, I would rather see them go ham in the playoffs. Right?
Yes.
So Leafs 9-1, and of course the Bruins 8-2 in their last 10. So there's not much ground to be made up.
Yeah.
You can't.
It's tough.
But I, as far as the Eastern Conference goes, we do know the New York Rangers have sent out a letter to their fans basically saying, sorry about this season, but we're going to have to rebuild.
Vancouver just did the same thing,
and
too.
And then Vancouver sent out to their season ticket holders. Yep, it's we're probably going to move some guys.
Yep.
And Ottawa probably should send out a similar thing, but I think that
we're going to get a new owner. That's what they should be sending out.
You think so?
Oh, I can't imagine their
Eugene
owner.
Eugene Melnyk, I don't think he's going anywhere.
He keeps complaining about money all the time, about how he's not going to support a team where it's not making money, yada, yada, yada. I can't see him sticking around too long myself. But
I think that Ottawa fans would probably hope that that's the case.
Right.
Assuming that they keep a team in Ottawa, that's the...
Yeah.
You got to find an owner who's willing to keep one there. But yes, okay. Well, let's get to the big news, and that is Dion Phaneuf.
Yes,
and Nate Thompson being shipped off to the Los Angeles Kings for Marian Gabrick and Shore. What's his first name?
Nick Shore. Yeah.
This trade, a pure money trade.
Yeah,
it's really all it was. Everything that I hear, the Senators probably will buy out Marian Gabrick at the end of this season.
Really?
And it'll save them $5 million bucks when all is said and done. From the Dion deal, which has 3 years left at $7 million, they're eating 25%, which is $175 on Dion's deal. And then Gabrick is a 4.8 cap hit. But if you actually look at the way the deal breaks down, he made most of his money early on.
Right. It's the real dollars he's getting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He's going to get a little bit less. So if they buy him out, they would save $5 million total from the whole transaction, which apparently there was a lot of rumblings about this happening in the summer at the draft.
Oh.
And it never happened because Ottawa didn't want to absorb any money. And of course, they've been forced into it. So, okay, let's just get your initial thoughts on this deal. Even if it's a purely money deal from Ottawa's standpoint, it's not really just a money deal from LA's point of view, because they're trying to win.
Yeah.
And they're trying to stay afloat in the playoff race even. And Dion coming in. Shoot, Dion might be on their third pairing.
That's a very good question, actually. Where would he fall in there? I want to pull it up and see what the experts on predicting lines got him. But for me, looking at this, I get it. LA is in kind of, especially with Dion's age and contract there, and kind of hoping now, let's hope we win now mode. Just because, again, with his age and the deal, it's going to make it a little tougher down the road to, for him to, I guess, play up to his contract. And what cracks me up even more is, a couple of years ago, I remember everybody was talking how Dion has this immovable contract, and now in the last couple of years he's been shipped off twice.
Yeah,
which just cracks me up. But I like the deal from LA's side. just in the short term. Long term, this one could bite them a little bit.
But if you think about it, long term, they were paying Gabrick and his cap hit was 4.8, right? Dion's is 5.25.
Yeah.
So, and Dion's deal ends at the same time as Gabrick's.
Yeah.
And so really, they lost $350,000 on the cap.
Right.
And they also get Nate Thompson, who is an overlooked piece of this deal. But Nate Thompson is an upgrade for the Kings as a fourth line center. Could slot up into the third line and play that third line center role, which the Kings have really struggled to figure out who fits where in their bottom six. And that's a huge aspect when it comes to the playoffs. I mean, everybody knows the top six on every team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those bottom six guys where they need to show up and they need to do something in order to push your team over the top, especially for a team like LA. And now that, you know, they get back Jeff Carter and adding Nate Thompson, it definitely doesn't hurt their depth at center at all.
No, not at all. And I mean, you look at a team like Pittsburgh that just won back-to-back cups. That's how they did it, with their bottom six depth, for
Absolutely.
Sure. So, but no, I mean, to your point too, I think since when you look at both of these contracts, basically going out at the same time, and Gabrick has missed, I think it's pretty much an even third of his games over the last few years since he signed with LA, he's missed. So you know Phaneuf's going to be healthier. You know he's going to be able to give you a little
bit. Phaneuf doesn't miss games.
Yeah, he doesn't
get hurt.
No. So he's going to be around. He's going to give you, you know, even if you get minimal production out of him, even at his age, I still think that's an upgrade for LA.
Well, as long as he's playing at the level he's at right now, he's not a bad defenseman. I'd say that he's about average.
Yeah.
And he's just at a 5.25 cap hit, he's a much better. He's kind of that, like, well, yeah, we signed him for a bit too much money, but I mean, it was what we had to do to get him here. Whereas he should probably make somewhere between 3.5 and 4 for his production, but an extra mil and a half isn't a huge deal when it all comes down to it. And now that he's in the final, you know, after this year, he's got 3 years left, right? And so now that he's a 5.25 cap hit, in a year or two, you can move that if you have to.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. And you could even eat a little bit more salary if you're LA, if need be, and
right.
make that happen. But he, oddly enough, now he's third on the team defense in scoring, so that's helpful.
Yeah, he definitely has that big shot on the power play. Now, okay, does this trade change the Western Conference at all to you? I look at LA, I look at where they're positioned. They need to jump Colorado. I mean, the Western Conference is so tight that right now, you know, LA wins a game and suddenly they jump up into third, and Calgary moves down into two spots out of the playoffs. So it's so tight right now that it's really difficult to find any space. So does adding a guy like Dion, even if it just pushes the number by a few goals in the positive, can this change the playoff race?
I don't know if it's a drastic change, but I think for LA, that, you know, little bit of leadership you're going to get out of Dion, the experience, you know, them going fairly deep in the playoffs last year. And then, of course, you know, LA's got a lot of young guys in that 5-6-7 role right now on D. So if you can bring in a guy who's been there with the experience he has and his hockey IQ that is coming with him, I think that's great. And to be quite honest, too, I kind of look at this trade, too, from another perspective and thinking of, you know, he's married to Alicia Cuthbert,
yes,
who is a Hollywood actress.
This former star from 24.
Yeah.
The daughter in 24. I think of her in that movie, The Girl Next Door.
Yeah.
Where she was.
Phenomenal movie.
Yes. Yeah. Great teen movie.
But I think, honestly, he's going to have like a spark to him now that maybe he didn't have in Ottawa because he's a little closer to where she's comfortable at.
That's true. So, yeah, you never. Yeah, that's. Don't underestimate a happy wife.
Yeah, exactly.
So happy wife, happy life.
I don't think it makes. Again, I don't think it makes a drastic change, but I think it's a little bump for LA, and especially when you got a team like maybe Colorado ahead of you and Minnesota that you're looking to jump. It's going to help a little bit.
So. Surely, the Chicago Blackhawks have lost 5 games in a row.
Unreal. Yeah, they can't stop losing. I think they've lost what now? 10 at home.
Yeah.
It's an ugly number.
It's there. Yeah. And Corey Crawford might come back, but why at this point? Just don't.
They did put Jeff Glass on waivers, but that doesn't mean Corey Crawford's coming back. Right. But it's funny, the Hockey News just came out with their power rankings, and they put Chicago dead last.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have indeed been struggling. I mean, the Oilers have lost four in a row, too, so they're the other team that has really struggled here. But Chicago done, I'd say, that we can just put a pin in them. And anyone below Anaheim at this point, which is there at 65 points, they're basically out of the playoffs. So you have four teams in the West and probably five teams in the East. Although, do you remember last week I talked about the Florida Panthers? How I said, hey, if they, you know, if they go off and they win a few games here in a row because they have so many games in hand, they actually aren't as far behind as it might look, with still 28 games left to go, and they've managed to win their last two. And suddenly, they're 7 points back with three games in hand on the Carolina Hurricanes. And it's Florida, it maybe is the one team that everybody had counted out that does have a outside shot at the playoffs.
Yeah, and they're going to get a little energy, a little boost of life to them because Roberto Luongo's back.
Yes.
So
yes, that never hurts, not having to play James Reimer every night. Yeah. Although Red Abera has been amazing for them, and that's why they...
Yeah, Harry Sotiri.
Or Harry Sotiri. Yeah. No, sorry, not Red Abera. Harry Sotiri, yes. He's come out of nowhere. And
He's been good, but there's something about just having Bobby Lou back there where it's just... You have an energy in the locker room now that wasn't maybe there before. And I'll tell you what, they're going to lean heavy on Barkov to really drive that team. So we'll see. I think it would be great to have them in the playoffs. Outside, I mean, if you're looking at teams like New Jersey or Carolina, I might enjoy watching Florida a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. New Jersey's pretty fun to watch.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I love Sasha Barkov.
Yes, yes. Okay, there is. I would say that there's actually... Let's talk about Taylor Hall for a second.
Let's talk about Taylor Hall.
Because Taylor Hall might just be the real MVP. And that's no joke.
That's Taylor a bold Hall statement.
Has 59 points in 51 games. Okay. He's been playing with two rookies all year long.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually playing with another first overall pick, ironically. He was first overall.
Yeah.
He is just absolutely tearing up the league, having a career year. He's on pace for like 95 points.
Is it that much? Wow.
Yeah. So, if he continues this and ends up, you know, I just think, being from New Jersey, that maybe he won't ultimately have that shot. There's other guys. See, the whole idea of like Bergeron winning the
Selke,
the MVP.
Yeah, just
the Selke, he's already. Yeah,
that's a wrap.
But when it comes to the MVP, I don't even know if he's the best player on that line, let alone best player in the league.
Yeah.
Even if he is the best player on that line, he's playing on that line with Pastrnak and Marchand.
Yeah.
And it's almost unfair. I mean, of course he's having a great season because he's playing with two amazing players. They have incredible chemistry. Whereas Taylor Hall is playing with two rookies, Jeremy Bratt and Nico Hischier, which Nico Hischier is supposed to be good, but Taylor Hall has driven that line like crazy.
Yeah, it's almost not maybe quite as much, but like a Connor McDavid situation where he's really driving the players around him very well.
Fair enough.
But
okay, well, shall we dive into a little bit of trade talk?
Let's keep talking.
Okay,
I love trade talk, to be quite honest.
I think that the Dion deal at least opened up some things, because now, of course, LA is not in the market for a defenseman anymore.
True.
One would assume.
I think LA's done making moves at this point.
I think LA could still be in on maybe some depth guys, but yeah. I mean, we see we go back and we'll look at last year. I mean, we see moves like Drew Stafford going to Boston from Winnipeg for a conditional sixth round pick. I mean, deals like Lauri Korpikoski for Dylan Heath or Higginton.
Oh, right. Those little
Hinton, you know, this
fourth line
little
guys.
Moves that happen all the time that don't really mean a whole lot, at least on paper, when ultimately they can have some effect later on, depending on, you know, who gets hurt in the playoffs and stuff like that. But I mean, Mark Streit getting dealt to Pittsburgh, and that was ultimately ended up being very good for the Penguins because they actually had to go that deep into their defense core and play Mark Streit in the playoffs because they were so injured. So let's take a look at some of the bigger deals from last year.
Yes, let's.
And let's give some thoughts and maybe compare to some deals that we might see this year.
All right. Let's do it.
Well, let's go with Kevin Shattenkirk.
Oh, the big trade.
Going to Washington. We'll start at the top because I don't compare the Dion trade to the Kevin Shattenkirk. Ultimately, so Kevin Shattenkirk was traded from St. Louis along with Phoenix Copley to Washington for a first, a second, Zach Sanford, and Brad Malone. Capitals were going all in for the cup with Shattenkirk. And it did not work. Not only did it not work because they lost, mm-hmm. Shattenkirk really didn't have as big of an impact, I think, as everybody thought that he would have on the Capitals.
No, he did not. This is, when you look at like a trade that is going to probably happen this year, you're thinking of Mike Green right off the bat. I think he's going to be this year's Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah, the
big name defenseman who has offensive potential. And even it wouldn't shock me, again, if Washington makes a play for this guy too.
Another one.
Yeah. Now, I don't know off the top of my head if Washington has a first-round pick to burn, but I think ultimately, like you said, it didn't really play out so well for Washington. He didn't gel with the guys. It just didn't really fit in their system that well. And ultimately, this one came haunting back, and I think St. Louis ended up dealing that first-round pick again anyways. They flipped it to Philly, I think.
For Shen?
Yeah.
Was that, yeah.
Well, which worked out pretty nice for them.
And then, of course, the Rangers signed him to a massive deal, and then the Rangers crapped the bed all season.
They did.
Which, speaking of another Rangers player that they signed to an absorbent amount of money, the Red Wings traded Brendan Smith for a third and a second-round pick. And certainly, it looks like the Red Wings got the better of that deal because there were people that were talking about how the Wings should keep Brendan Smith or re-sign him. And it's looking like a good thing that they didn't, because for the money that he got and the term that he was able to get from the Rangers, and now didn't they put him down the minors at one point?
Yeah, they just did. Him, right? They just waved him and sent him down the HL. What they're hoping to, because they've scratched him a ton of games this season already, and I think what they're hoping now too is like, okay, it's not getting through to him. That scratching him is just like, hey, wake up. So let's send him down the minors because no one's going to take that salary for a guy we've been scratching all year long.
True.
So maybe this will wake him up.
And if somebody does, then good riddance probably is the thought.
But for me with this trade, actually, I have to kind of disagree. I think this trade worked out favorably for the Rangers.
Okay.
In the sense that when he came on, he drove that defense back there very well during the postseason for them. Now, that's what they wanted him for, and I think maybe in the back of their minds, maybe they had a long-term plan of thinking, we're also going to re-sign this guy too. But from a pure just, this is a deadline move, we want to bring on a guy to help us make a good run in the playoffs. He went 12 games, put up 4 points, and was a +8. His possession numbers were very good, and he played a lot of time with Ryan McDonagh on that top line.
There you go, that's why.
absolutely does not hurt at all. And he was pretty much the only guy who looked good playing next to McDonagh during the playoffs last year. So, yeah, now they have what's-his-face Holden up there playing with him, and he'll probably get dealt, I think, this year. But, yeah, now when you look at it long-term,
if you're playing with Ryan McDonagh, don't expect to be on the Rangers much longer.
You know, right.
Is that the message?
Right. So, yeah, now, I mean, obviously they've made the crucial mistake of re-signing him, and it has blown up in their face. From a Detroit perspective, I kind of liked him, and I wish the Wings had kept him, but I would not have paid him anywhere near that money.
Right, it's one thing to like a guy for value, but not for an overpayment. Yeah. What's your best trade of last year? The trade that you'd say, this is the deal that maybe made the most impact? Because I definitely have one in mind. There was a couple that... there was a lot that were made, but a lot of them weren't super impactful to their team other than, you know, even the Shattenkirk deal wasn't that ultimately made that much of a difference. But I will say that the best deal of that trade deadline was the conditional second-round pick
I was just about to say that.
That Anaheim sent to Dallas for Patrick Eves.
Yeah, he was good. And it turned into a first-round pick because they went to the, conference finals.
And then Patrick Eves re-signed with Anaheim, so he didn't end up even being a rental. But
yeah, he was good when he was there. I mean, he put 14 points up in 20 games and 11 goals.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he rolled. And that was probably Anaheim's last shot at it with their current core.
I mean, I'm not ruling them out yet, but
this year, well, we all know that Ryan Kessler's playing hurt.
Yeah.
And the rest of the team has been hurt at different points in the year. And this year feels like Tampa Bay last year, where it was like nothing can go right for you. Maybe wait till next year. But the difference is that they haven't had a Kucherov step up. You know, they haven't had a guy where it's like, okay, this season's kind of been a loss. But look what we found.
Right.
They've almost been pillaged. A lot of their prospect cupboards are relatively bare in comparison to like a Tampa Bay, who is just, they're half their team's made up of like undrafted free agents. Right. So, yeah, last year's trade deadline was uneventful, and I do think this year is going to have some bigger names in it. Obviously, we've already seen Dion Phaneuf moved. I am pretty confident that Rick Nash will move. I don't like Mike Hoffman. You have TSN has their trade bait board.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Nash is number one, Mike Green number two, Hoffman three, Brassard four, and Maroon number five, Kane being number six. Mike Hoffman,